Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Is It a Real Classic, a podcast about movies and TV shows where a bunch of well-versed folks come together and enter that age-old movie debate about what makes a classic. I am your host, Litnik. With me today, as always, is John Wick Jared. Say hello, John Wick Jared.
Hello.
We have Cobra Kai, Sweep the Leg KP.
Hello.
Hello.
Authoritative, yes.
Heavy O. And then we have, of course, Bad Times at the El Justine.
Hello.
And newcomer today, had to develop this name real quick, Saving Private Ray. Say hello, Ray.
That was not.
Okay, listen, if you want to spitball ideas, you want to workshop, like, R names. Oh, you know, rated R for Ray. That's also very good. That's very good.
R for Ray. Yes.
Yeah.
You can't see rated R movies.
No. For years.
It's an irony thing. But today, the presenter today is Justin, and it is Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, because I'm trying to figure out, because some people just say it's just Ghost Dog, some people say it's Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, and it's both.
I think you can shorten it up for the purposes of discussion.
Yes. For context, for those of you who don't know, Ghost Dog is about an African-American hitman who has styled his life after The Way of the Samurai. After a hit has a complication, Ghost Dog finds himself being hunted by the mob. He must do whatever he must to survive, all while keeping the samurai way. Well, this is my first time seeing the movie. Also, extremely hard movie to find.
It is. It was difficult.
Yeah, good news for everyone at home. It's going to be on the Criterion Collection very soon. They announced this, like, last week or so, at least by the time of this recording. So you
As
could,
well it should be.
So you can now purchase the Criterion version of Ghost Dog, and not have to worry about that pesky, you know, having to find it through other means. So, who wants to start off the discussion on Ghost Dog?
It's so good. The Criterion Collection rules.
It's very
good. It does.
Very fancy stuff. And hopefully, with this podcast, we'll be able to influence those people to add more to the collection, because as we know, they are definitely listening. Podcast.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Give them money every week, so they listen. I'm not like, if I have a subscription.
Customer is always right, and the money is always correct.
Exactly.
So, who wants to talk first about Ghost Dog? My first time seeing it. I believe this was, I don't know how many people this was their first time seeing the movie. I know it probably was Jared's, right?
Yeah, never seen it before, fresh off watching it.
Well, yeah,
I used to own it on VHS.
Ooh,
nice. Legit. That's the good stuff. So you had it on VHS, you said. So you have fond memories of the movie?
Yes, I've seen it a couple of times. Not as many times as you would think, having owned it on VHS. But yeah, I like the movie, absolutely.
Well, now we're here to talk about whether or not it's a classic. So, it is very weird, I will say. When I first saw it, I didn't really know what to think of it, because it's very much a samurai movie and a mob movie put into a blender, and they called it a day. It means much more nuanced than that, obviously, but
But it has lots of its influence.
Oh, definitely.
Try.
Yeah, they constantly like there's like the obvious mob ties, because obviously you have the mob being a big part of it with Louis and that whole section of the movie, and then you have it immediately clashing with them quoting Hagakure. I had it written down right here. I just wanted to make sure.
There
I
you go.
It right.
Good job.
Which is, I believe, the book is called The Way of the Samurai, right?
It's the book is actually the let me see if I remember it off the top of my head. Hidden Leaves, Book of Hidden Leaves.
Meaning hidden by the leaves or hidden leaves, so you were correct.
Okay, cool, yeah. So, it's a 16th century book on samurai etiquette and some philosophy, but a lot more on the lines of how he should conduct himself to be a proper retainer for his lord. More than, like, the Book of Five Rings, which is about swordsmanship, and the Book of Family Traditions, which is also about swordsmanship.
Different than the Book of One Ring, which is about some swords, a bow, and an axe.
And a tiny little fellow.
That joke should have landed better. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway. We do have this very big culture clash. What did we think about that culture clash, by the way? Because it is two different complete tones, the samurai movie and the mob movie.
I thought it handled it very well. I thought the kind of transition from them was good. Transitions in this movie were also just really good. The fade in and out, different shots, very classic. Something you'd see in a lot of samurai movies.
It is definitely paced like an old samurai movie with stuff like Yojimbo Rashomon.
I liked it because it was slow, but it was always intriguing. I was always very into seeing what would happen in every scene.
It served a purpose.
Yes.
I think the fading to black and then going back to and approaching the next scene allowed you to focus on each individual scene, and it was almost every scene was like, I mean, to me, I'm jumping the gun probably, but every scene was perfect in its own way. And as you close that scene out, it was almost like acts in a play.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's
Yeah. Especially the culture clashes, because you also have that urban city culture clash with the mob culture, as they're kind of, you know, those things overlap. Those areas of a city tend to overlap each other a little to some degree, but still be separate. Along with the samurai influence, you're telling two stories with an outside influence.
Well, you know what I mean? It suits the samurai story because samurai were a separate class from the regular people. So you had the innate culture class of nobility and the regular people in the samurai movies. You know, so the mob kind of serves that purpose in there as the, you know, the villainous nobility that can be played off of.
That actually brings up a very interesting point of the movie, which is the fact that it really, and I didn't really, it took me a while when I milled on the movie to really come to this. It's really a deconstruction of both the mob movie and the samurai movie. Because it takes what you know of both genres. Like you said, samurai are a higher class. They are of nobility. And you expect the mob. You think The Godfather. You think Scarface. You think all of these like elaborate,
exactly,
large
things. I know what you're about to point out.
And in the movie, Ghost Dog, both the samurai and the mob are kind of in the dumps.
You know? Yes. And that's they talk about it. The age has moved past us. You know, the mobsters, all, notice every one of their properties is for sale.
Oh, yeah. They're bankrupt.
Yeah. There's a lot of really neat details in the movie.
Yeah, like even that little small bit with the boat. For example, like, yes, he has a boat that how's he going to get it over there? He just does it because he does it, and there is probably no hope that boat will ever see the water, which is kind of like this whole futility of trying to, like, keep this old.
But having
version.
Your own way that you wish, what you want to practice.
Yeah.
This guy wants to practice the way of the boatmaker. Doesn't matter to him that it serves no point where he is.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that you do see both of these, basically these two, I'm trying to figure out the best way for it, like these two pinnacles finally dying with age, it does lean itself to, once again, the slow pace of the samurai movie, as well as just being as you just see everything collapse, I suppose. There's another thing I did want to ask about, because it's mentioned a couple times, and we did allude to this earlier, is the factor of race in the movie?
That's a strong component.
It's a strong component. And there's a tossing around of the N-word by one of the antagonists around there. There's a clear difference in communities, as we said earlier.
That dude was hilarious. The three mob bosses were so funny.
Oh, yeah.
They were
when he starts quoting Flavor Flav, dude. Died
of a heart attack at the end of the movie? Or, like,
yes.
Movie, he literally just, like, keels over screaming.
There's this
movie juggled comedy really well in a lot of its scenes, I think.
It's a dark comedy
really
in a lot of
surreal
ways.
Surreal, because, like, the one dude just watches cartoons all the time.
All the mobsters watch cartoons all the time.
Old stuff.
Notice that? They all are watching cartoons. And the cartoon always has something to do
with how
what's going on.
Yeah. It's almost like the quotes. It's all foreshadowing. Just like the quotes, that are interspersed with the movie and the cartoon themselves.
I love that quote where he talks about taking all the big stuff lightly and taking all the small things seriously, and that's like a running theme throughout this movie.
Well, and that's the essence of Zen and that Zen influence in Bushido, which is, you know, in the midst of battle, you should treat your life as nothing. But when you're pouring your tea, you should consider that a critical thing in your life right in that moment. You know, you should transition like that.
So they'll just, you know, they'll just order someone to, you know, go get whacked. And then they'll just, like, watch cartoons with, like, intensity.
Mm-hmm.
just very angrily watching the movie.
Oh, that dude had the meanest mug of all time.
Dude, Henry Silva is one of the angriest looking humans ever.
Naturally.
But back to the point I was making earlier, it's like the object of race is definitely there and they acknowledge it. But do we think it's a major factor of the movie? Do we think that it helped to bring out any ideas from the movie, or was it just sort of there?
I'd say not necessarily. Not
a central factor when you look at like the scene with the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is true. Very true. That scene with the bear, definitely. Yeah.
Would you like to clarify what the scene with the bear is for?
There's a scene with two hunters have shot a bear, and Ghost Dog is driving by and he sees it, and he asks, and their whole explanation is like, you know, there's not many left. You better kill them while you got the chance. So he ends up killing them both, and then he says the line about, you know, in ancient cultures, bears were considered equal to man, and this guy goes, you know, well, this ain't no ancient culture. My favorite line in the movie, some days it is, kills him, because now you're equal with the bear.
It's a very, very memorable scene. It's a very good scene, and I think it's like one of the scenes that really stuck out to
Which
me.
Leads into the next scene with the two, where the mobster shoots the female police officer and does the same kind of thing. She wanted Absolutely. Equality. Well, I gave her equality.
Right.
I shot a cop.
In a strange way, the equality was an underlying theme of the striving of that.
Exactly.
Murder is equality.
We're all okay, equal in the grave, 6 feet under.
Exactly.
Correct. Everybody's equal when they're dead.
I'd like to point out a little thing that probably not many people. The guy, there's a scene where he sees an old man about to get mugged, and the old man drops the dude to mug him. The dude who played the guy, the old man, is an actual Shaolin monk.
Really? He was quick.
Oh, dude, yeah, absolutely.
That is the guy who came from Shaolin and founded Shaolin in America.
That is rad. That's rad. All right. This movie also has really strange little cameos in there, like him, and you also have RZA. Just
RZA!
RZA himself. Just walking down the street. Just
he does the soundtrack, too.
He does. He produced it and put a lot of stuff together.
The soundtrack is a huge part of the movie.
Exactly.
He underlines each little scene where he's driving in the car. It gives you, like you said, the public enemy scenes, the contrast of the mobster that's a mob boss being so in love with Flava Flav. All of that is, you know, neat.
Mm-hmm.
It also adds a bit of like how the mob is like trying, you could argue like that's a bit of cultural appropriation in terms of like how the mob is trying to adapt in the modern times and how it still isn't. Anyway, that's a thought. That's another thought. And just came up with that, so I don't know how far that would go. Want to read into it that way.
Oh, dude, come on. Flesh out your hot take right here. Yeah,
it's not a hot take. It's more of just something I just remembered upon thinking about it. It's like,
all takes are hot.
All takes are hot here, even if they're straight out of the freezer.
Yeah.
You put it that boy in the microwave. Woo, it's
I don't know if we've mentioned the essence of the movie is that he's getting beaten. The Ghost Dog is getting beaten up. He's not Ghost Dog yet, I don't believe.
Yes.
He's got the writing on his shirt, which leads you to believe he's already started studying some of these ways, the samurai. And yet, when the mobster, the underling, mobster saves him by killing the people who were beating him up and going to mug him. He utilizes and begins to learn the teachings and the ways of the samurai in order to please them, his master, who is the man who saved his life. And then at the end, of course, he gives his life. You could be fooled in the movie into thinking he's killing these people to free himself, but he is not.
That was never the point.
No, he's killing these people to free the man who saved his life, and then will give. And then as you see him, like you pointed out, he takes the bullets out of the gun before the last shootout because he knows if his gun gets picked up, he pulls the gun away from his best friend who runs the ice cream truck because he knows if there's a shootout, one of them may try to defend him in shooting the man who he owes his life to. He protects the man about to kill him because that man gave him the next 4 to 5 years of his life.
Exactly. And gave him purpose.
Absolutely.
A small detail. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to point out a small detail with the mugging scene. It's remembered in different ways.
Which is the. Yes.
Which is a callback, obviously, to like Rashomon, which is a book that is referenced many times in the movie.
And they mention the chapter, the first chapter.
Yeah.
The first of the short stories is, correct. The story of several perspectives.
Oh, man.
And it's a movie by Akira Kurosawa.
And one of, arguably, one of the best movies ever made as well.
Dude, Mifune, full on, 100% Toshirô Mifune.
Mm hmm.
Awesome.
100%. Fantastic. I don't even know what you were going to finish. It was 100% him, yes.
100%. Just, no, he was so good in that movie. Oh man,
I like the aesthetics of things, too, in this movie. Every one of his weapons was a stripped-down version. He had nothing fancy. It was all pieced together. His gun, he made his own silencers. He had these worn-down but well-serviced guns. His sword didn't have anything. It was a stripped down sword. You know, every weapon he used was even his sniper rifle was an AK-47.
You know, speaking of weapons, I just, like, upon thinking back about it, one of the most memorable things also about the movie is the fact that whenever Ghost Dog puts his gun away, he does the little, you know, twirl thing.
Samurai flourish.
Samurai flourish.
Fling the blood off, but it's like a gun.
So it's like, like, why are you Ghost Forest? Why are you doing this?
That's so cool.
Anybody else with Forrest Whitaker that comes all stupid, but
this is
Forrest made it work.
What a performance.
And this movie is a very actor performance driven film, and it's perfect for each person to take their small role, perform well, and make the movie matter. Every single performance, the racist guy that can't hear, he is an integral part of the film. The guy who sets up the first murder and then winds up sitting in the same room acting like he never did that the whole rest of the way, who loves Flavor.
Yeah.
The guy with the ugliest face ever. Gentleman who is the person that Forrest owes his life to. The Frenchman, his best friend that he can't even understand a word the guy says. The young girl's performance is amazing. And every book she reads is important.
Yes.
The Frankenstein, as he pulls out and reads the last couple of lines of it. Everything is put together so well. And it
The Souls of Black Folks by W.E.B. Du Bois.
Absolutely. And yet the way it's shot and the way they let every scene breathe, and like you said, it moves slowly, allows for every actor or every look that Forrest gives, the way he looks at a girl walking down the street is no different from the way he looks at the people he's about to take clothes. You know what I mean? Like, everything is so well done through the whole thing.
Yes.
So Michael Bay, where everything explodes every 3 seconds.
Listen. You're right.
It is amazing how much more you can do with less sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is very much a movie that likes to take its time. And it does remind me a bit of Rashomon in terms of it having like these small, like, even though there is a larger narrative, there are these smaller stories planted within it. If that makes any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like there are even the recurring motifs, like the dog that shows up twice.
which is the death, which is the black dog, you know, that's a symbol of death, you know.
The haunts him. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And the young girl being only in about four scenes, but she's the movie reading the book because it's not really over.
We should not really talk about the ending, I suppose.
Speaking ending was very... It's almost, I don't want to say quite a passing of the torch, but in a lot of ways, the passing of the torch.
Absolutely.
It was close.
If I may, once again, put on my reading spectacles, if the movie is essentially about the deconstruction of both genres, about the death of the samurai and the death of the mob, both of the old school die, and it's passed on each of them to the next generation. Like, if I remember correctly, the young girl from the mob turns off the TV saying, I'm done with that, right?
Uh-huh.
That implies that she's not going to follow the same ways that the old mobsters do. And now that we have the little girl with the book, a reading samurai book, the book with reading book, well done there. But you get what I'm saying. She's reading the book, and therefore she's going to be becoming, essentially, it'd be like the hopefully, because of the new generations, that if they learn from the mistakes of the past and why the two worlds couldn't coexist, maybe now they can coexist. Maybe now there can be something better built out of something that was broken.
Or we can set up a badass sequel where Perlene comes after the mob chick.
I have heard rumors.
I absolutely said that when she was sitting now reading that book. I said, we need this sequel.
I'm going to look up and see the specifics about that, but I feel like that ending also is kind of perfect in and of itself, where it is supposed to be this kind of, and now the cycle continues, and now there will be a kind of rebirth and whatnot.
Yeah, I saw it as, in the same way that Ghost Dog was a samurai, those archetypes don't necessarily go away with each age by the new form. Instead of there being like a ruling class, like the nobility of the samurai age, it is now mobsters who have influence and hitmen and stuff like that. Like, it is changed, but that power dynamic is still present in
a way. Exactly. Very much, yes. Very much so.
Yeah, I figured that was kind of the meaning of the film.
I did?
One of the, like, yeah, because, like, every scene, every quote, I'm just, like, I'm stuck on. The quote I'm stuck on, my favorite one, is the one where it talks about walking through a rainstorm.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you can try to run and get under awnings and stuff, but you will get soaked all the same. It was kind of about if you just accept that you'll get soaked regardless, you have a better understanding, and that applies to many things in life.
That goes back to the first quote, which is the way of the samurai lies in death, and accepting death, that death is the inevitable. And if there's a cool scene, if you notice the first scene when...
Well, Justin dropped out of the call, he will return. We're going to be left with bated breath as he returns. But I did, just so you know, I did look up Ghost Dog sequel, and Jim Jarmusch confirmed that there will be a sequel, but it will not be a movie. It's looking like it's going to be a Ghost Dog TV series.
That's what I'm talking about.
Start and finish every episode with some of them quotes, baby.
Justin, you didn't hear this.
Yeah.
Ghost Dog TV series is what it's looking like for the sequel.
Oh my god, I love it.
And what were you saying, Justin?
Oh, I was just saying, you know, the quote about the rain and how, you know, that leads to death, but also that scene where he first walks around, you see him walk between people and nobody ever sees him because he walks right as they turn. So he's invisible. He's walking between the raindrops.
Like a ghost. Cool. I'm sorry.
A ghost dog.
A ghost.
Exactly.
The way of the set. No, anyway. Yeah. We are also like the old fashioned ways of like how Ghost Dog gets his hit. I know we're referencing now the beginning of the movie now, but this is another aspect of the movie I found kind of interesting, was the fact that Ghost Dog himself is so old school. He, like, I need to be spoken to via carrier pigeon.
Exactly.
Once again, emphasizing the kind of old school way
and paid only on the first day of autumn.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I suppose I should ask now, does anyone have any final thoughts before we turn it over for Justin Soapbox? Any little tidbits about the movie you want to get out there? Things you like, things that bothered you?
And the music was... It was inspired by the old movies in the best ways, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just
rising anticipation and steady drum beats and the usage of like horns and drums both were just very, very good.
And the hip-hop vibe...
Oh, dude, yeah. Dude, the hip-hop vibe was awesome. Oh, yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of Samurai Champloo went for that same kind of aesthetic.
You're so right. You were so right. That show's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Dope.
What about you, KP? Any final thoughts?
Oh, man. I think I poured my tea out all over the table. We're good.
I want to clean that up a little bit. Justin, you are now allowed your final argument, closing argument for the Soapbox for why we should consider this great movie, not just great, but also a classic.
I think that when you combine all the elements of it, the tour de force by Forest Whitaker, all the character work, this amazing camera work, soundtrack, the elements of philosophy and culture that it combines, that you've just got the makings of something that's bigger than itself at times. It's a little goofy crime movie, but it comes off a lot heavier with a lot more gravitas than you would think. And I think it's a natural classic.
I think I'm going to make an additional argument for it being a classic in that I feel like I'm going to watch this movie again and again and find
new things every time.
Find new meaning, find greater understanding of it every time.
Let me give you a top tip too. Read Hagakure. It's a great book. Really interesting if you have it.
Well, we got three people on the Soapbox. That's all right.
This movie was cool. I love stuff that like blends cultures together and kind of mixes the old with the new. It's like right up my alley. So like, yeah.
And I'm just a little sidebar. I'm a quote guy. You know what I mean? Like constantly write down quotes and think of quotes. And whenever I find a quote, I like. And this movie is just, whether you're talking about the readings from the book, just general things, it's so full of quotes that help you guide your way. Like everything you've said, you know what I mean? You can't, you come away and you want to remember quotes. You want to go back and read 4 or 5 that they've mentioned. It's a movie that kind of makes you want to be smarter.
Yeah. Like
exactly.
It's makes you ponder philosophical questions and think about things, which that's what great movies should be doing.
The purpose of art, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have three people on the soapbox. Let everyone get down. Get down from there. Right? Only big enough for one. Get down. All right. So I suppose we go around the room now. KP, what is your vote on this?
No, it sucked.
All right.
The heel turn. 6 out of 10.
No, it's perfect. It's a perfect movie. Absolutely. Classic.
All right. Here.
That will be a yes for me as well. It's good Ray. Enough for the correction. It's good enough for me.
Ray, what do you think?
What do you think, Ray?
I watched this movie so much. My favorite part was when he...
When you catch your phone.
When he held him by the shoulder and said, "I am the ghost dog, way of the samurai."
Maybe, yeah, he said that.
Maybe the real exactly. ghost dog, the way of the samurai, were the friends we made along the way.
Like, exactly.
That's a yes. That's a yes from Ray. I don't know
it yet. Just so we know, Ray is just sitting in on this podcast. He did not see it. That's why he did.
I saw some birds in the movie.
I did see some birds.
He took the briefcase out of the floor. I just blurted out. I didn't think. I just blurted out. Are there more pigeons in the briefcase?
Awesome.
He put pigeons in the briefcase under the floor. Emergency
never,
pigeons.
Never go full John Woo. John Woo, just king of doves. As for myself, just so everyone Clarification sake, when I first saw the movie, I was on the fence of it. Like, I didn't know how to feel. Like, I didn't think it was bad. I really did think it was really good, and I do recommend it if you can, you know, find it. But because I was trying to figure out whether or not it was just style over substance, so I've seen a lot of movies pull the quotes in between scenes and try to have all of these, like, throw all of these things at the wall, and ultimately it's just trying to appear more deep than it is. But this movie, like, upon the more I thought about it, and the more I kind of saw it as a deconstruction of the genre and how it acts as this kind of salute to the samurai genre in and of itself, I feel that it is definitely, it's able to pull it off in the perfect way, and it is indeed a really underrated classic that, I don't know, I feel like, I'm surprised I didn't hear about it before now. But now the Criterion Collection is coming, so I guess more people are going to hear about it.
That's why we have attention.
Yeah, and when it came out in 1999, dude, it was like, I saw it in the theater. It was a little art flick. It was not, did not get much exposure. It was a Cannes movie and that kind, you know, from the film festival movie. So, a lot of people, I think, it fell under the radar for them.
You but, know, film festival movie now has a different meaning than it did in 99.
Mm-hmm.
Film festival movie now means you should watch it, whereas when we were younger, people were like, well, it's not Rambo, or it's not, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I don't want to go to the theater and listen to an essay. You know, I came here to watch, you know, some fun stuff because I have a long day at right. work, which is, you right. know, nothing wrong with that kind of entertainment either. But also,
there wasn't A24. You know what I mean?
It was before A24, and now that got popular, definitely, as well as other independent companies kind of bringing indies to the forefront and getting more general audiences involved. Definitely. So I suppose that's a all across the board thumbs up for Ghost Dog for it being a classic. So if you want to watch it, good luck finding it. All I'm going to say is just good luck.
Hey, to Criterion!
Criterion, shout out to Criterion.
Criterion sale at Barnes & Noble happens twice a year, once in the summer, once in the winter. You can pick it up for $20. It's a great deal. It's going to have a bunch of bonus features because they all do. Criterion Collection rules.
Yep. Still waiting on my Criterion Collection of Candyman.
I think, in all honesty, I feel like as time goes on, it probably will. It seems like a movie.
I'm really happy that Ghost Dog is getting its time in the sun, though, with it. Because, like, I saw, like, the tweet about it, and a bunch of people were like, oh, yeah, this movie! Why didn't anyone talk about this movie? And I'm just reading the tweets, like, talking about this movie and how it's impossible to find. Why is this? Anyway.
Might be a part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen a copy of it in person.
The movie is, that's why I made the podcast. I like bringing up these movies that people haven't seen or don't consider to be classics, because it kind of brings people like, oh, maybe I'll check it out, and we get to experience more things and new things. But speaking of
hard arguments, doing the Lord's
work. I tried to do it. Speaking of hard arguments, recently, during the time of this podcast, the DC fandom happened. And in honor and in the spirit of that, we're going to be doing an episode about one of my favorite DC animated films, in fact, my favorite DC animated film, and what I consider to actually be a classic, which is Superman vs. the Elite. No bucks involved.
Pretty no, sure. No bucks, no penny.
I was...
Yeah.
Wow, this is... All right.
This is
hilarious. Hilarious. Thank you.
That was a wrestling reference.
Yes, exactly. It was, you marks. Anyway, we're going to check that out next time. Hope you guys come over and join us. So for all of us here, everyone wants to say goodbye.
Later, guys.
Watch good movies.
Watch good movies.
Everything is art.
Everything is art. Yes. And finally, Ray, do you have any final closing words?
This podcast is art.
True.
Everything is art and everything is political. But this has been Is It a Real Class Podcast? It is a Go Home Heat production 2020. Thank you all for stopping by. And like Jared said, just go watch good things. Go do good things. Still working on this outro. All right, cut. I'm done with this outro.